Hey, good evening, everybody. Shmuel Platz for coming at you live from Gulf Manor Synagogue. Not my house. Gulf Manor Synagogue. How exciting is that? And our School of Jewish Studies. As we begin tonight's class on Malachim Aleph, we're continuing our study of 1 Kings chapter 9. And it's going to be great. So let's get right to it. There's no time to waste. We're going to end a little bit early tonight, but not too early. And I also must warn everybody, I don't have all that much juice in my phone, so if we get cut off in the middle, please forgive me. I brought the wrong plug. I wanted to juice the phone during Minchan Marv, and it just didn't work out for me. I have a little bit of life left in the phone. Let's get right to it. We ended off last week. We did not all that much, I guess, new stuff, but we did do verse 14. Hiram sent to King Solomon 120 talents of gold, and that's kind of where we ended. Let's go, let's continue. Again, 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 15. Okay, here we go. V'zeh devar Hamas, asher he'aloh ha'melech Shlomo levnos es beis Hashem, v'es beiso v'es ha'milo v'es komos Yerushalayim. This is the matter, this is the thing, this is the matter of the mas, the tax levy, which King Shlomo raised. Hasher he'aloh ha'melech Shlomo, King Shlomo, put this tax up. What's the tax? Well, we're going to see in a moment what the tax really is. Is it money or is it something else? So hold that thought. Shlomo instituted a tax in order, livnos es beis Hashem, to build the house of God, obviously the temple in Yerushalayim. That's beiso in his own house. That's hamilo, and also milo. That's Chomas Yerushalayim and the wall of Yerushalayim. That's Chatzor, as well as Chatzor. That's Megiddo and Megiddo. That's Gezer and Gezer. So you have a lot of building going on, and it's all being done by King Solomon. And he's, in order to get it done, he's levying a tax of some sort. What is that tax? Is it money or is it something else? So it might be something else. It might be money. Let's see what the authorities say it was. Let's take a look at the footnotes. V'zeh devar Hamas. This is the matter, the thing. This is the matter of the tax levy, which King Shlomo instituted. Says our footnote. That is to say, this is the account of the tax levy. This is, you know, this tells you what the money was spent on. Alternatively, this is the purpose of the tax levy. And for that idea, see the Radakya Barbanel, the Mitzudas Tzion, and the Malbim. This is the purpose of the tax levy, and it tells you all the things that Shlomo built with that tax. The tax that he instituted upon the people in ancient times when he was the king in Israel. The question is, was it money or something else? Well, we're going to see right now. This, we continue with the footnote. This refers to the tax levy delineated at the end of the topic. Now, let's go right to that. This is going to be a Rashi. Rashi says, as told to us, as pointed out at the end of this topic, all the remaining people, of them, did Shlomo raise a levy of forced labor. The levy, the tax, was forced labor. This tax levy was to build therewith all these structures. When you put together a tax, and the tax is, I need people to build stuff, that's the tax. Well, okay, it's not money, but rather it's a tax on people's work. It's making people work, forcing them to build up cities or rehab or renovate cities. One of them certainly is going to be like a rehab thing. Okay, so indeed, let's go right to verse 20 and 21. Okay, so let's go over there. I'll read that in English. Later on in our chapter, it's not that far from us. Verses 20 and 21. 20. All the remaining people of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, who were not the children of Israel, verse 21, even their children who remained after them in the land, whom the children of Israel were unable to annihilate, of them, of these various tribes, these Canaanite tribes, of these people, did Shlomo raise a levy of forced labor until this day. Lamas Oved, Vayalim Shlomo, Lamas Oved, Shlomo instituted, set up, he raised up a levy of labor Ad Hayom Azeh, until this day. So that, according to this, according to Rashi, he's looking a little bit later for some insight, and 3-4 psukim later, it tells us what the tax was. It was forced labor. That is, the purpose of this tax was to build the temple of Hashem, says the Radak and the Metzuda, and also Milo. Okay, that's a place that was in, this is going to be a Rashi, that's a place that was in Yerushalayim, in the city of David, that was called Milo. Why was it called Milo? Because it was enclosed by a low wall, and it was filled with dirt. The word Milo is derived from the word Mole, says Rashi. Mole, of course, means full. So if the word Mole means full, then the word Milo is going to be like a little play on that, or a derivative of that word Mole, full, and therefore the word Milo is a neighborhood, a place in Jerusalem, in the city, in the Ir David, that's called Milo. I don't know if it's still called that, but we do know that the Ir David to this day exists in Yerushalayim, mostly an Arab neighborhood called Ir David, the city of David. It's in that, not too far from the Kotel. Others explain that the Milo was a plaza where the people would gather on joyous occasions. That's a beautiful thought, that back in ancient times, there would be a place, a plaza, where the people would gather on joyous occasions. King David had built up the city as far as the Milo, but he had neglected to build up the Milo itself. That he did not do. See 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 9. Shlomo did that. So King David, his father, didn't, but Shlomo did. Shlomo did that building of Milo during his reign. See the Ralbag, see the Abarbanel, and compare, see the Rashi on 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 9. So that's Milo, a neighborhood in this Ir David in Yerushalayim, because it was enclosed by a low wall and it was filled up with dirt. The word Milo is derived from Mole, full. Again, King David had built up the city as far as that area, but he had not done any building of Milo itself. That was left to Shlomo, and that's what he did. Das Sofrim combines both interpretations. He maintains that the area was surrounded by a double wall that was filled with earth. The area was surrounded by a double wall filled with earth. The section that was adjacent to the wall was not built up in order to make room for the people to assemble during the festivals. However, later it became necessary to build up this area to provide quarters for the pilgrims. So that's the Das Sofrim. And the wall of Yerushalayim, that was also something that Shlomo built up. He built up Milo, Ve'es Chomas Yerushalayim. This is chapter 9, verse 15. He also built up the wall of Jerusalem. What's the footnote say about that? It says that Shlomo constructed a new wall around Yerushalayim to include the built-up area. He did this to allow the pilgrims to be able to eat from karbanos, sacrificial meat, that would therefore be within the new confines of the holy city. He kind of extended out the walls of the city of Jerusalem, thereby enabling all these pilgrims, all the those who are Ole Regel, to be able to eat their karbanos still within the confines of Yerushalayim, and that therefore they'd be able to be mekayim that mitzvah of eating it within Yerushalayim, and it would not be, heaven forbid, eaten outside Yerushalayim. So he extended the city of Jerusalem, built it out a little bit, enabling the Ole Regel to be able to do that. Welcome, everybody. And Chatzor. Chatzor, what else is Chatzor? He also built up Chatzor and Megiddo and Gezer. Okay, we are continuing in chapter 9, verse 15. At the footnotes, Chatzor, what's that all about? That's a city in the north. This city had been burnt by Yehoshua. We're informed by in the book of Joshua, chapters 10, 11, 12, and 13, that Yehoshua had burnt the city of Chatzor in the north, and apparently it had not yet been rebuilt. So now Shlomo is rebuilding it. And what about Megiddo? That's north of Ta'anach. So we've got to see above chapter 4. That's in the valley of Yisrael to the east of Dor. That's Megiddo. Is that the famous in the Western world, famous for the apocalyptic? Is it Har Megiddo over there? Or otherwise known in English as Armageddon. It could very well be, because where else could it be, but Megiddo. and Gezer. That's a city on the southern boundary of the territory of Ephraim, south of Ein Ganim. It's called Genin. See the cuff of Ephraim. So we have that in our
right here.
Megiddo is right there. Okay, there's Megiddo, and just to give everybody a little bit of an orientation, if you know where Jerusalem is, and many people do, then Yerushalayim is over where it is in Yehuda, and then you just keep on going north, and then you got to start hooking a left, and it is. It's above Tanoch, and it is to the east of Dor, which is right on the Mediterranean Sea. It looks to be about, I would estimate if I had to, 200 kilometers or so northwest of Jerusalem. And it's near the Kishon River, or not all that far away from the Kishon River. Mount Carmel comes into the picture in that general area, and it looks to be about maybe 100 kilometers south of Akko, which is also on the Mediterranean Sea. So that's where Megiddo is, and it's all the way in the north over there, not too far from Har Tabor. And where else? It's looks to be about 150 kilometers maybe west of the Sea of Kinneret, the Yam Kinneret and Tiberia and so on. So that's kind of where it is. It's north up there and to the west. Okay, so now we have some sort of bearings as to where some of these places are. According to some, Gezer is the place commonly known as Tel Yezer, or Tel Jezer, which is southeast of Ramla. I know where Ramla is because that is a town in Israel where a lot of Karaites are hanging out. That is where they've got a Karaite synagogue, and something of a vibrant Karaite community, mostly of Egyptian Karaite Jews who had come up from Egypt right after the War of Independence. They left Cairo and they came into Israel, and some found their way to Ramla. I got on a bus back in the day when I was visiting and I interviewed some of them. Yeah.
Isn't Ramla the stop, like the intercity buses, the stop just before the direction of Yerushalayim? Ramla, I think, no?
Could be. Could very well be. Ramla, that's a Jewish town as opposed to Ramallah. Obviously, Ramallah is the Arab town.
Oh.
Just keeping everybody straight on that.
Oh.
Ramallah is pretty Arab, and Ramla is very Jewish, very Israeli.
Are they totally different places?
Totally different places.
Oh, they're not going to make
the same. Yeah,
so
not the same. It's not the same town.
Gezer.
Well, Mrs. Berlov is showing me Gezer. Oh, okay. So thank you. So let me try to orient people to the town called Gezer. Gezer is west of Yerushalayim. Looks to be about 100 kilometers west of Jerusalem, and it's headed towards the Mediterranean Sea. So it's not that far away from Yerushalayim. You can't really walk it in a day, obviously, but it looks to me maybe like a week and a half on a donkey would get you over to Gezer. 100 kilometers roughly west of Yerushalayim and a little bit north. So it's north and a little bit north, very west of Jerusalem. Thank you very much for that, Mrs. Berlov. So we're getting our orientation straight. So Ramla, south Tel Yezer, Gezer, there it is. Gezer is, we're told, southeast of Ramla. Southeast of Ramla. Now, if Ramla's not coming up on my map, I'm not sure how much that's going to help me. I don't see Ramla coming up. Southeast of Ramla, I don't see it on the map. Just don't. I see Lod. I see Bet Choron, lower and upper, and that's going to maybe play a role. We're going to be discussing that, I think, very soon. But I don't see Ramla. Okay. We will continue. Yeshakaya for pointing that out. Thank you. Here we go. Good. 16, Tess Zion. What's that got to say? Oh, this is an interesting one. Paro Melech Mitzrayim Allah. Paro, the king of Egypt, made Aliyah, came up to Israel. But he'll code as Gezer. He came up and he conquered Gezer. Ba'yisrafah ba'esh. He burnt it in fire. What is going on over here? How do you come into somebody else's country? What are you doing? He comes into the land of Israel. Shlomo's the king. Paro sets one of the towns on fire. You know, I learned this earlier, and now that I'm reading it out loud, I'm going, what? I mean, you know, what is that? Let me just finish the pasuk, and I'll take your question or your comment. Vilkoh is Gezer. He conquered Gezer. She burned him in fire. That's Hakanani Yosheb Ba'er Harag. And he killed all the Canaanites who inhabited the city. Vayitnah Shiluchim Levito Eish Shlomo. He then gave that town, Gezer, as Shiluchim, and they translate it as a gift, a present to his daughter, who is the wife of Shlomo. I will take questions now.
Okay, my question is,
of course,
do we have the past perfect, or proof perfect, or whatever you want to call it, in this process? Is it out of order? Because doesn't say, as you would expect, if we're just talking about a continuation of the
question,
exactly. By Allah, he had already John had gone up there when he did his job on Gezer, and he had also in the past killed the Kanani, and then he did the Shiluchim Levita. So I'm wondering if before the events that are described in the previous pasuk, which include giving the mass from Gezer into Aliyah, if the events of Tezai had occurred already.
I think that he may have been instituting this tax, and we said earlier that it may have been, according to Rashi, looking a little bit later in Apsukim, it was a labor tax, forced labor.
Sure.
And so these people were building Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo's house, Milo, Chomat Yerushalayim, the wall of Jerusalem, which we said earlier a moment ago, he extended out so people could eat their kabanos, is still in within Yerushalayim. And Chatzor, Megiddo, and Gezer, all these towns are like built up or renovated or whatever with this forced labor.
I'm forgetting the power had already done.
He had already done stuff. He had already gone up. He had already conquered Gezer. He had already burnt it with fire. I hear that. Obviously, grammatically, you're saying, making a good point. But my question is, I don't understand how that works anyway. I mean, when was that done? He then gave this burnt-up town, he gave it as a gift to Nadunya, says Rashi, and Nadunya, he gives it as a gift to his daughter, who's Eisha Shlomo. The question is, do you walk into somebody else's country and burn stuff up, and then you give the burnt stuff to your daughter? The whole thing is a shtickle schwer, but we'll try to work it through. Mr. Brother, what do you got?
If we look in the commentary here.
Okay, let's go there. Let's go right there and see what, if any, light can be shed. Here we go. Now, the footnote says as follows. Paro, king of Egypt, burnt it with fire. Says the footnote, this is a parenthetic statement explaining why Gezer, a city inhabited by Canaanites, required rebuilding. Thank you. I read that a couple hours ago. It didn't stick in my head. It had already happened. Paro burnt it. Then Shlomo rebuilds it. And then it is given as a gift, I presume, from Paro. Or maybe no. Paro just burns the town down, kills all the people in it, and says, now you can rebuild and it's all your property now. Do what you want with it. And you don't have to deal with Canaanites. They're dead. You don't have to deal with a crummy city. It's burnt up. You have you're free access to this property now. Do what you want. Do what you will with it. So thank you very much. That's what's going on. Paro had previously burnt it with fire. That explains why this city, which had once been inhabited, was no longer inhabited and was able to be given over as a present. But that explains why it required rebuilding. So says the Malbim. So thank you, Mrs. Berla, for pointing that out. What's a gift? A nadunya. A dowry, says Rashi. That's how they translate. That is what a nadunya is, right? So that's what he gave along with his daughter to King Shlomo. He gave this, burnt down piece of property as the nadunya. But you know what? It's good real estate. You know, and you can make something with it. And if it were near Lakewood, it would be worth a fortune. Could pack it in with 10,000 people overnight. Alternatively, Shiluchim, a gift, as people usually give their daughters, says the Radak, says the Metzudah. To whom did he give it? To his daughter, who is Shlomo's wife. Says the Kli Yakar, since his daughter was the wife of King Shlomo, the great builder, who had constructed numerous buildings and cities. He left the rebuilding to his son-in-law, Shlomo. You know how to do this. You've done this before. You build it yourself. But here's the property. Clear it out. It's all yours. Free of Canaanites. And what could a Jew want? So that's what he gave to his daughter to hand over to the son-in-law. And that is the most fascinating pasuk. Explaining Gezer, right? Okay, let's just see. Hold on 1 second. Okay. Yes, Gezer. So that's pasuk Tezayin. Mr. Brewer, what do you got?
I found Chatzor. I
you found Chatzor, yes. Chatzor, I think they said, is way north, right?
Yes.
A city in the north.
But it's on the, it's near the,
Yeah. It's near a small little lake above the Yama Kinneret. Looks to be about 50 or 75 kilometers up. And it's straight north from the Yama Kinneret, straight up north in Naphtali.
Near that, the river that flows in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the...
Okay. Okay. Thank you for pointing that out. There's going to be an incredibly interesting town coming up. I don't want to give it away. It was in the news a year ago. I don't want to give too much away. But then again, you've got the same safer I've got. And I was fascinated to see it. If I'm not mistaken, this was major, major news 1 year ago or so. I'm not kidding. Really big. Let's go see it. Let's get right there. Verse 17. Yud Zion. Vayiven Shlomo es Gaza. So Shlomo built this town, Gezer. There's Beit Choron, Tachton. And the lower, Beit Choron. Now, Beit Choron, here it is. Do we see it? There's lower Beit Choron and upper Beit Choron, and it's in bold, and it's smack in the middle of our map here in our Sefer. They give us this book, so let me show it to Rabbi Berlov, just to give an orientation.
Lower Beit Choron is north of upper Beit Choron.
According to them. Lower Beit Choron is north of upper Beit Choron. And I can't explain certain things.
It could be a man altitude.
Maybe just altitudinally.
Germany, you have that
okay.
Country.
Okay, so.
Overland, Winterland.
Uh-huh.
No German. So, yeah, you have that in some places.
Got it. So even if it's north, if it's geographically lower, if it's like in a little bit of a valley, let's say, then it would be called that. And that's where it is, right over there, lower Beit Choron and upper Beit Choron. And it looks to be about 100 kilometers or so northwest of Yerushalayim. Not too far from Gezer. Not that far from Gezer. To the east of Gezer, right? And a little bit north and east of Gezer. In between Gezer and Yerushalayim. All right. Wait till you see what we come up with in this pasuk. Next pasuk. Again, Vayiven Shlomo es Gaza ves Beit Choron Tachton. Shlomo built Gezer and the lower Beit Choron. So he built Gezer up, right? I mean, Gezer had been burnt, so he builds it all the way up. And he also builds Beit Choron Tachton, lower Beit Choron. Fine. See if there's anything to be said about that. Pasuk Yud Zion, do we have anything at all? A little bit. And lower Beit Choron. Says the footnote, Beit Or et Tata, or Tata. Was one of the two cities named Beit Horon in Divrei Hayamim Aleph. 1 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 24. It's situated on the path between Yerushalayim and Yafo, between Givon and Azekah. So where's Yafo? Yerushalayim, right where it is. There it is. And Yafo, help me out over here. Where would it be? Did they say Yafa?
Oh.
But I would have thought it's Yafo. But where is that?
Yafo is Tel Aviv, right?
Yeah, Yafo is right there on the sea, right. Exactly right next to Tel Aviv. Bnei Brak makes an appearance over here. Didn't know that Bnei Brak actually even existed in biblical times. That must be crazy. I just think of it, you know, as Rabbi Akiva's hometown, Mishnaic times. But they give me Bnei Brak on the map. Are you surprised?
I am surprised. I would say, I think they may be anachronistic. You have very, very few... double names, you know, stock Hebrew, kind of like two-word names. So you do, but very few.
No, that's funny on here. That's funny, aren't you?
Tell you what.
But where do we see B'nai B'rak?
Are these biblical or are these post-biblical teachers? The other ones.
Hey, welcome there, Shabbat.
Oh, yeah, you do. I strike out.
Okay, you're going to withdraw that motion of yours. Fair enough. It's withdrawn. But still in all, B'nai B'rak, where does that appear in biblical literature? I mean, have you ever seen that? I mean, it's an unusual... I just thought it was a later town, that it came up later. That's what I thought. At all events, now we know where Yafa is. It's famously right next to Tel Aviv, right there on the Mediterranean Sea. So if you want to get an orientation, that's where Yafa is, where contemporary Tel Aviv is. Okay? Most people, it goes back a long, long way. Next time I go back to Israel, I'd like to see Yafa. I never really saw it when I was living over there. Akko, all the way in the north, I never saw that. These are ancient port cities which, had a lot of activity going on, old architecture, old buildings. Frankly, I'd love to see them. I never did see them when I was living there, and I think that it's long overdue.
Isn't Yafo just now, Yafo subsumed under the Tel Aviv metropolitan area, no?
Very possible.
You know, like at one time maybe, I don't know, Blue Ash and Gallery were distinct villages, you know what I mean?
They've been eaten up.
Yeah, I think it's probably.
It's very possible, but still in all, they're trying to maintain the integrity of the architecture over there.
So
they're not letting crazy development go on over there.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to make it, keep it as well. That's my understanding. So he built up Gezer, because it had been burnt, and he built Lower Beit Horon. Let's finish up that footnote. Second. Okay, again, it's situated in the path between Yerushalayim and Yafo, between Givon and Azekah. The one mentioned here was in a valley. Lower Beit Horon was in a valley. Beit Horon, the higher one, that was situated on top of the hill. And there you have it, your exact thoughts. This served as a buttress in the event of an attack from Egypt and the Shefala, they write. The Shefala. You got me on that one. Honest and true, and I'm not sure exactly what the Shefala is, but we're going
to
continue.
It had to do with Shefala with and valley?
Possibly, right, possible. The author of First Chronicles of Devarim records Shlomo's building both the upper Beit Horon and the lower Beit Horon as fortified cities. See First Chronicles chapter 8, verse 5. The lower Beit Horon was in ruins, and it necessitated rebuilding as a dwelling city. Subsequently, Shlomo fortified it together with its sister city, the upper Beit Horon. That is the account related in Divrei Hayamim, and for that point out, we thank the Malbim. Okay. And now, Pasuk Yud Ches. Pasuk Yud Ches. Now, this is fascinating, and there's a lot on this. Ves Ba'alos, Ves Kamor, Bamidbar, Ba'aretz. That's the whole verse 18. And Ba'alos, he presumably built, because it's listing off what he built. So he also built Ba'alos, and he built Tamar in the desert, Ba'aretz, in the land.
Tadmor is the Cree, right?
Right, okay. Tadmor is the Cree. I was reading you the Ksiv. It is written Tamor, but the Cree has to be Tadmor. Thanks for pointing that out again. The Cree, indeed, is Tadmor. So he built Ba'alos and he built Tadmor in the desert, in the land. What is going on? What is Tadmor? What's Ba'alos? Tadmor is actually more interesting. And what does it mean in the desert? What does it mean in the land? Where is this? So the footnotes are telling us as follows. The Midrash in Bereishis Rabbah tells us, chapter 56, subsection 11, here's the Midrash, quote, "The sons of Abraham should vanquish all their enemies." Meaning who? The Tadmorim. Fortunate is the one who witnesses the devastation of Tadmor, which was a partner in both destructions of the Holy Land. See Medrash Eicha, 22, chapter 2. It's an interesting sight. In the Gemara in Yevamah 16, it is stated, "We cannot accept proselytes from Tadmor." And finally, in the Yerushalmi in Titus, chapter 4, Israel will make a festive day when Tadmor will become extinct.
That was the Sodomer and Amalek.
Right. And Edom. Edom comes up because Edom was a terrible baddie, according to the Tehillim. It was in the Tehillim of Yom Yerushalayim, mentioning over there how they were screaming, Aru Arad HaYesod Ba, and they were hurting Jewish people as they were trying to escape. Edom gets up there as a bad one. Tadmor gets up there as a bad one. What's incredible is that Shlomo builds up Tadmor. And then centuries later, these people give it all back in the worst possible way, and they hurt Klal Yisrael. And we're going to see a little bit of a footnote regarding Hakaras HaTov, or the lack thereof. But that is fascinating. Fortune is the one who witnesses the devastation of Tadmor because of their actions in the Churban Bayis 1, Bayis Sheni, and also the destruction of the Eretz Yisrael. And we don't accept Gerim from them. Wow. That is really something. Any thoughts on that? Were we aware of the evil of Tadmor? Wow. In 2 Chronicles chapter 8, verse 4, it is written, the Ksiv over there is Tadmor. The Ksiv over here is Tamar, lacking the letter Dalet. Over here, Tamar. Over there in Chronicles, Tadmor, spelled out. Rashi there in 2 Chronicles points out that in Malachim it's written Tamar. And the reason for this is that although they owe Shlomo allegiance, for he built their city, they substituted ungratefulness and rebellion for gratitude. Anybody who builds your city should show a little curse or tov. That they did not do, and instead they became the enemies of Klal Yisrael. In Hebrew, substitute is tumura, exchange or substitute. Al ha-geula v'al ha-tumura is the famous title of Rabbi Yehudah Teitelbaum Sefer right after the Six-Day War. I guess he was writing that we could have had a big geula and say one for the tumura, one for an exchange. We substituted, instead of something fabulous, we got instead a military victory. So goes the Satmar Shita. In Hebrew, substitute, exchange, is the word tamura, hence the word tamar. In Kings, right here in Malachim, we mention this by calling the city Tamar.
Here it is. Here's Tamar. And it's right on that border with Moab, which would be the desert, right?
It's really south. It is, looks to be about 50 to 75 kilometers south of the Yam HaMelech. And indeed, right on this border, the Israel-Moab border. Pretty south. And that's Tamar, or Tadmor. Thank you for that. Thanks for pointing that out, Mrs. Berloff. Now, wait on this. Where do we read this out to you? Remember, we're going to end 5 minutes early. I've got to get this kid into sleep. Watch this. Again, in Hebrew, or in Kings, we mention this town by calling it Tamar, or Tamor. But in Divrei Hayamim, which is written in honor of the base David, okay, Divrei Hayamim Chronicles was written in honor of base David. They are spelled and called Tadmor. But over here, in Malachim, it's called Tamar. The scriptures deleted any reference to the fact that they rebelled against Shlomo. So says the Mincha Shai. You don't see anywhere of the people rebelling against Shlomo Melech.
What does that have to do with the Dalet or no Dalet?
This has a different place for Tadmor.
I know. I was going to get to that. Don't break the magic over here, Mrs. Rella. But you know what? While you're thinking about that, let me say it out, and we also have to address Rabbi Berloff's question. Tadmor, we read over here, is Palmyra, 150 miles northeast of Damascus. Northeast of Damascus. Wow, that's really far up north. That's off my map. It's not on my map. All I got is Har Hamon, and I got Aram Naharayim. There's not much over there except for Bashan and Argov and whatever. And my map in my Sefer, it doesn't really help me out. Damascus is way north, and this is way north of that.
And why would he be conquering there that's not connected to us?
Right. And what would they have to do with the Jewish people so way up north? Did classical Israel in the time of Shlomo Melech extend all the way that far north? I didn't know that, that it was going all the way beyond Damascus, 100 miles plus northeast of Damascus. So, what? I mean, the whole thing is unusual. That is a very, very unusual sighting for Tadmor. But yet we see Tamar, and it's all the way south. So which is it? All the way north? Or is it all the way south?
It was Tamar, I guess. And that's based on Yechezkel.
Yeah, right. The footnote tells us to go to Yechezkel 48, chapter 48, verse 28.
Maybe the Tadmorim moved from Tamar up to Damascus and up to Tamar and get away.
Maybe they did. But man, that's quite a move. And then to rename the place, I mean, I don't know. Here's my question. Does anybody know what I was talking about when I mentioned Palmyra being in the news of about a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago? 1 or 2 years ago, it made the news, if I recall correctly, because I think ISIS was destroying, if I'm not mistaken, ISIS had a foothold in Palmyra. It was a Roman town for a while, and there were some things of interest from the Roman period. And this offended the Muslims, the fundamentalists of ISIS, and they were destroying stuff. So much so that I think it had been named a UNESCO World Site, and academics from around the world were bemoaning the fact that stuff was being destroyed in Palmyra, because Palmyra, all the way up in Syria, was a repository of Roman things. And for that was, you know, fascinating for academics and for world history, and it was getting destroyed by ISIS. Hence my comment about Palmyra. Now, if Tadmor is Palmyra, all I could say is, wow, I never would have thought that this town mentioned over here in Tanakh is that far north of the land of Israel. I mean, it's far north of northern Israel. I don't get it. I don't know what to say. All I could do is just read what I read. But we'll continue. And how is that the desert? Is that all the way up there? Is that the desert? Yeah, it looked a little bit deserty when I saw it on the TV, on the web. Let's take a look. In the desert, Bamidbar Ba'aretz, in the desert, in the land. The contrast, says the footnote, between these two phrases, Bamidbar Ba'aretz, in the desert, in the land. So there's a contrast between these two places, these two phrases, therefore leads Rashi to explain that Tadmor was in the desert, because it does indeed say Bamidbar, but it was Ba'aretz, it was near civilization. Ralbag explains similarly, one side of the city bordered on the desert, and the other side bordered on arable land. Not Arab land, arable land. The Midrash, however, explains that Tadmor was far out in the desert. But for Shlomo, it was as though it was in the land, Ba'aretz. How do we square that away? With a great midrash. He owned a huge eagle upon which he would ride, says Kohelis Rabbah, chapter 2, subsection 25, as explained by the Kli Yakar. This midrash, it's far out in the desert.
He flew, in other words.
He flew. This midrash is quoted by the Yalkut Shimoni. So I'm sorry, did I miss that one?
He flew.
He had a flight plan.
Right.
He had, I have a book in my, for the kids, No Nach or something like that. I think we may have showed you that.
He flew on the wings of an eagle.
He flew on the wings of an eagle, exactly. And he would talk to the eagles, and he would have this enormous eagle come into his palace. I mean, really, really big. So, it wasn't that problematic for him. I mean, to be 150 miles northeast of Damascus is his own private little jet. That was the ultimate air. That was ultimate air for Shlomo. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted.
Look,
by that.
If he could build there on the steps instead of his throne, there were mechanical animals, right, which when you stepped on the pedestal there...
They became...
Right, they yeah. moved, right?
They moved, right.
Right.
So he can do anything.
Right.
I mean, this is a magic man. I mean, he can mount on a giant eagle, and he's going to ride that. Ladies and gentlemen, please fasten your seatbelts. The next stop is Palmyra, or known as Tadmor. 150 miles northeast of Damascus, and please remain belted in until the captain takes off the no smoking sign. Wow, it's really just amazing. What I learn every day is just incredible. I thought you were going to get a kick out of that one. And that's brought down in Carlos Raba, Chapter 2, Subsection 25. So it's not that far away. That's how you Mekayim Bamidbar Ba'aretz. It's both in the desert and it's in the land. And you've got a giant eagle, nothing, no place is too far away. Pasuk Yutes. That's Kol Arei HaMiskinos, Asher Hayu L'Shlomo, and all the store cities, Miskinos. That word ought to ring a little bell. Doesn't it ring a little bit of a bell? They're going to quote us to Shmos. Chapter 1, Pasuk Yud Aleph. But that's Arei Miskinos. Exactly right. And I keep on thinking, oh, Miskinos, you know, Misken. And indeed, that word is going to come up. So let's bank that thought. But let's just read the Pasuk. It's Kol Arei Miskinos. Asher Hayu L'Shlomo, all these storehouses which Shlomo owns, that's Arei HaRechav, that's Arei HaParashim, and also the cities of his chariots, his Rechav, and also his cities of his riders, that's Cheshit Shlomo, Asher Chashak Livnos B'Yerushalayim, Uvalavanon, Uvachol Eretz Memshalto. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And Shlomo's desire, which he desired to build in Yerushalayim, Lebanon, and in all the land of his sovereignty. He built these cities with this tax, the labor tax. It's going to become explicit in the next two psukim. We're on your test, and it's laid out explicitly, certainly, in verse 21. So again, he built store cities, and he built cities for chariots and cities for riders, and everything else that he wanted to build in Yerushalayim and Lebanon and all over the land. Let's take a look and see what, if anything, there is to see for us in your test. What are Arei Miskinos? Store cities. What's that all about? The Hebrew is Arei HaMiskinos. We find a similar expression in Shmos, chapter 1, verse 11. See the Mitzvah Tzion from the Targum. Alternatively, Miskinos is derived from Miskenus. Miskenut, the top at the end, Miskenus. And see Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 9, meaning poverty.
Miskenus, is it Tochal Balechem, right? Is that the quote, I think?
Well, we could look it up, Devarim chapter 8, verse 9. So Devarim chapter 8, verse 9, let's grab this Chumash over here and see what that passage says quickly. Devarim chapter 8, verse 9, and we'll conclude. At least I've done 19, maybe even 20 today. Let's go to Devarim chapter 8, verse 9. Let's see what that says.
The Targum would probably say something like Maschenta or something here.
Uh-huh.
The Targum says Otsaraya, treasure
houses.
Let's see what.
Okay.
Here
we go. Uh-huh. Do you have a Balcoe over here? Chapter 8, verse 9. Here we go. Eretz asher lo v'miskenus tochal b'chlechem lo sechzer kol b'ch. Eretz asher v'nei avazel v'mehara tachzov nechoshes.
I'm just curious when the Targum says we don't have it in the room.
Okay, miskenus is derived from miskenus. Aha. Uh-huh. Let me just translate the pasuk that I just read. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 9, which we just read, it's a land, Hashem brings you to a good land, a land of brooks of water. This is verse 7. Pasuk Zion, two psukim earlier. Should keep Hashem's commandments, walk in His ways, fear Him. Pasuk Zion. For Hashem your God brings you to a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths, springing forth in valleys and hills. Verse 8, Pasuk Ches, continuing, a land of wheat and barley, and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey. Pasuk 9, a land wherein you shall eat bread without scarceness. You're going to eat bread without any scarceness. You shall not lack anything in it. You won't lack anything there. It's a land whose stones are iron. and out of whose hills you may dig brass. And the next pasuk, iconically famous, the chalta, the savata, you will eat and be satisfied with erachta Hashem alakecha, and you'll bless God your God al haaretz atovar shenasan lach, about or for the good land which God has given you. So that's the context over there of Moshe telling Klal Yisrael, entering Israel, it's a beautiful land, not going to lack for anything. Rabbi, what do you got?
Right. He uses that the way I said it, but the same root of Miskenus, and Targum over there used the law of the Miskenu, just the Aramaic equivalent, whereas here he says Otsarayah.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the Targum understood this word as meaning something totally different here compared to what it means in the Garden.
Wow. Thank you. Okay. All right, we can continue on a little bit. Okay, again, alternatively, Miskenos is derived from Miskenus in Zavar, meaning poverty. That is, Shlomo built up the impoverished cities which were in his kingdom. So says the Abarbanel. Hence the past tense which Shlomo had. Let me just see that word. Yates, Asher Hayu L'Shlomo. Okay, all these towns that Shlomo had. Before he built them up, he had impoverished cities. After he built them up, however, they were no longer impoverished. Says the Kli Yoker. Was it disturbing you? I'm going to try to please cut it out. Thanks, honey. Okay, one more pasuk. Let's go to Chaf. Kolam hanosa min ha'amori ha'chiti ha'prizi ha'chivi ha'yavusi asher lo mibnei Yisrael hema. All the remaining people of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Prizites, the Chivites, the Yevusim, the Jebusites, who were not of the children of Israel.
That I'm missing here. Conspicuously absent.
Uh-huh. Can the word Kenani, that was a distinctive tribe, or was it just like the general? It's a general term for all the dudes in Canaan. Probably it was a distinctive tribe known as the Canaanites per se.
I think it was, and I think sometimes it was used generically.
Okay, you know? Sisera, Judges chapter 4, wasn't he the general of the Canaanites, of the Canaanim?
I'm sure you're right. I don't
think so. So that was saying there was both a general generic term and also a tribe within the greater bunch of them. And this is this thing up over here. Listen to this. Prizites, a lot of people. Amorim, Chivim, Prizim, Chivim, Yevusim, not of the children of Israel. Look at the next pasuk. Benehem, their children, Asher, I don't have a nakuda over that.
Yes.
A nosru, right, it has to be nosru. But they left it out. Asher nosru achareim ba'aretz, asher lo yachu b'nei Yisrael acharimam. Wow! Their children remained after them in the land. These are the ones whom b'nei Yisrael were unable to wipe out. They couldn't destroy them. V'ya'aleim shlomo l'mas oved ad yom hazeh. Of them, v'ya'aleim, he was ma'ale aleihem, this mas oved, this labor tax upon these people, upon the children of those Canaanite tribes. Shlomo raised the levy of mas oved, forced labor, ad yom hazeh, until this day. Take a look at some of the footnotes, and we'll wrap it up. Verse 20, they were not b'nei Yisrael. Ashalom b'nei Yisrael hema. That is, who were not converted to Judaism. After all, what kind of words are those? Amorites, Hivites, Jebusites, Hivites, they were not from B'nai Yisrael. I know that.
They weren't even allowed to convert.
That's an interesting thing. Would they not have been, if they wanted to convert, could they have done so if they wanted to go a step above being a ger?
We're supposed to force them out.
You're either going to live by the seven mitzvahs of Noah, or you leave, or you die in a fight, were we allowing anybody to convert by our law? Was there ever an allowance to allow the local tribes to become full-fledged Jews? Is my question.
I remember, vividly because of that suffering, you know, the, as you called it earlier, took a very lenient opinion in terms of a background, how he explained something that bothered me, hadn't jived with what I had learned myself, and that I was fixed up with a young lady in Cleveland.
Do you know about this?
Okay, letting on now. And she was at the Atlas Seminary, and she mentioned that the Tao Sutra was her teacher. By the way, you know, Tao Sutra was Rabbi Sinek Levinson's brother. So he was her teacher, and I'll give you his number. You can call him up and ask him. I chickened out. He's a nice guy. You know, I totally chickened out. Because later, subsequently, I found out that he was right, that there are several different opinions on this whole subject of what the options are for the people of Shiva's Anima, how to convert, and what can be the next piece. It's not something unanimous is all to get within the power.
Thank you. So there is certainly, according to that Sofram, there is a leg to stand on to say that maybe they could have theoretically converted.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. And fascinatingly, we saw earlier in Shmuel about the guy who claimed to come from Amalek. He claimed he was a ger from Amalek of all tribes. And if that doesn't shock you to the core, well, then nothing will. If a guy from Amalek can convert, why can't a Chivite convert? I'm just my own little Kal Vachomer, as feeble as it is. These are people who had not converted to Judaism, says the Abar Benel. Okay, now 21. And their children remain, we're going to wrap it up with this, their children remained after them, says the footnote, quoting the Kli Yarker, since the original inhabitants of the land had been inadvertently permitted to remain there, contrary to the precept of the Torah, what was that? According to this, that all Canaanite nations that remained in the land and did not convert were to be destroyed. Aha, either convert or you die, according to this.
Right.
Convert or die. That's
that part is certainly, I mean, they didn't do it.
Convert or leave.
Oh, maybe I'd have to leave, yeah.
I'll kill you. Leave.
Yeah.
You can leave. I'm not going to have to kill you, but if you're going to stick around, we've got a problem here. Because of this sin, they were inadvertently permitted to remain there, contrary to the Torah. Because of that sin, the children of the nations became so strong that the Israelites were unable to destroy them. They were only able to subjugate them, says the Kli Yarker. That explains what's going on over here. Shlomo subjugates them by putting them into forced labor, makes them work and build up cities. But there is no widespread annihilation of these tribes because they just couldn't do it. And the last footnote, Me'aleim, upon them, Shlomo raised Lamas Oved Adayom Azeh. He raised a levy of forced labor, which is to say, Shlomo levied a work tax on these people, not a monetary tax, says the Mitzudas David. And that's what Rashi said earlier. Rashi, Sukkim earlier, had said that it all comes down to a forced labor. There it is, Lamas Oved, but not a monetary one. How are you going to get people to build cities, you know, just because they're raising money? You know, raising some, you know, a couple of pennies on the sales tax. How are you going to be able to build cities in ancient times? You got to impress into your building force thousands and thousands of people. And that's what Shlomo did. And hence, he was able to build up various places throughout the land of Israel. Wow. Okay. Oh, well, we continue on a little bit more, right? Because they were the men of war. Now, is that the next pasuk? Yes, that is the next one. That's Pasuk Chav Beis. So let me make a note of that is Then it's continuing to be 22. So let's stop over here. A little bit earlier than usual. I got to get this kid in. I want to thank Rabbi Mizrahi for coming out tonight. Thank everybody who called in tonight. Have a wonderful week. God willing, we're going to continue on with Pasuk Chaf Beis, and with Metz Hashem, God's help, we'll conclude Chapter 9 next week. Very exciting for us. Everybody have a great week, a profitable week, a successful and safe week, and a very good Shabbos. Take care and be well, and a good Nechodesh to all. Thank you so much.